The following show is closed caption for the reality impaired. The Jerry Bader Show.
The most common refrain that I've heard from people in the past few days. Where'd the summer go? Where'd the summer go? Where'd the summer go? It's August already. I can't believe it's August already. Now, I think this is the same thing as last year. Such a late start to the summer. You just, your internal calendar, if you will, gets all out of whack. But stop it. There's plenty of summer left. Now, admittedly, we have not had a lot of super hot days. I got to tell you, I'm okay with that. We've had some very nice days. A beautiful day at the fair in Milwaukee over there. It was actually almost got a little warm at times, you know, walking around. But you couldn't hope or pray for a better day. Sunny and about 80. It was just, my family and I had a wonderful time. But it's August 4th. There's plenty of summer left. I mean, now, most people measure that by the school year. I get that. Well, even that's still almost a month. Labor Day. School starts after Labor Day in most cases by state law. In most cases. Some colleges ramp up. You know, private colleges and other ramp up a little before that. My daughters will be going to school in a few weeks. But even that, it's a few weeks. And in terms of summer, you can have some very nice weather into September. It's not gone. Now, that said, I will giddily throw in that 1 month from today, the Packers are on Thursday Night Football in Seattle. 1 month from today. By the way, I'm not going to talk sports to open the show except to say this. Abradaris, really? I'm sorry. I know some of you don't like foul language. Damn it! I got to tell you, I feel for him more than anything. I mean, he was relatively healthy at Wisconsin, wasn't he? Did he have any serious? I don't remember. I honestly don't, and I didn't check it. Jared Abradaris, NFL career is delayed due to a torn ACL. And he was looking good in training camp. And I have a feeling I am convinced he was going to make the team. And I was convinced he was going to surprise. I've been saying that all along. Now, I may never be validated on that, even if he comes back from the ACL next year. I mean, this is a tough setback. Dang. I actually think this is hard to measure. I think in some ways it's kind of a big blow to the Packers because, I mean, I'm not even going to say any names. I don't want to jinx anyone. But it's not like an established player that it happens to. But I think he was going to be a pleasant surprise. I've had that feeling in my bones. And now, because he's never going to be the guy coming straight out of college without a knee injury. He's just not. And the Packers were kind of evasive about it, that's kind of Mike McCarthy's MO. To be evasive about injuries until finally you have to admit, and everybody already seemed to know it, that it was a torn ACL. Dang! I was so bummed when I first heard that Friday afternoon. It's like, are you serious? Just saw a lot of promise, and I'm hoping he can come back. I really do. All right. I want to start by sharing a portion. It's very long, and I'm going to be honest. I think some of it, quite frankly, is filler, which is something I almost never say about things that Peggy Noonan writes. Peggy Noonan writes a piece for the print edition of the Saturday Wall Street Journal called Declarations. It usually posts Friday night at the Wall Street Journal's website. The headline over this is, out of many, two? Okay, you know what that's a reference to, right? Out of many, one? That's the translation for E Pluribus Unum. As you know, the country is split in two right now. More than it was during the Vietnam War. More than it was during Watergate. Some people believe it's as split as it was, or as split as it's ever been since maybe the Civil War, when it really split. Will it ever heal? She makes the argument that it may not, and that might not be a bad thing necessarily. I'm going to share the first section of this, and then I'm going to jump ahead because she kind of gets into, I think she strays a little bit. I had a conversation this week with an acquaintance of considerable accomplishment in the political and financial worlds. Translation, it's a name you would know. Back to her. The talk turned to how some prospective presidential candidates seem to be running to lead two different countries. Rick Perry, say, and Elizabeth Warren experience, see, reflect, and approach two very different realities. The conversation then took a surprising turn. My acquaintance said it's possible the U.S. in our lifetimes will simply break up, tear apart. This might not be terrible, he said. It would probably work out fine. He spoke not with an air of alarm, but philosophically and almost cheerfully, which took me aback. I think a lot about the general subject of what deeply divides us, occasionally with a feeling of some alarm. I mentioned that America has been more or less politically divided since I was a young woman. I remember Time magazine had a big piece on the two Americas in 1969 when I was a teenager. Again, that's Peggy Noonan writing. Back then, divisions played themselves out in such national arguments as Vietnam and Watergate. I realized after our conversation that throughout my adulthood, I had thought of America as more or less divided, with 20% or so in the center who politically hold things together. So here's what has been her perception of America. And I think this is most people's perception of America. 40% left, 40% right, 20% center. And they tend to ebb and flow and keep things on a relatively even keel. I think that's the way most people look at the political construction of America, and that it hasn't changed all that much since then. She writes, I remembered Lee Atwater told me in 1988 that every presidential election takes place in the 20 yards in the center of the field. At the same time, I always assumed that America was uniquely able to tolerate division. Shared patriotic feeling and respect for our political traditions left us, as a nation, with a lot of give. We could tug this way or that, correct and overcorrect, and do fine. My concern the past few decades has been that we've lost or are losing some of that give. The divisions are sharper and deeper now, in part because many of the issues that separate us are so piercing and personal. Vietnam and Watergate were outer issues. Many questions now speak to our essence as human beings. And then she goes through them. Abortion, immigration. I don't know if she gets to gay marriage. Then I want to skip ahead. I came to think that policy disagreement aside, it was that most people in politics grew up in and were surrounded by, in the first 30 or 50 years of their lives, an incredibly, historically affluent America, one whose financial strength was so mighty it could absorb any blow. This fact of their lives became their reigning assumption. You can do any amount of damage to America, and it will be fine. I want to stop there for just a moment. Here's her point, that America by its nature was so robust in such good shape, so strong, that you could abuse it a little bit, maybe more than a little bit, and it will come back into shape at some point, or at least just be able to continue to take the blows again and again and again. She goes on. The country they grew up in is the country that lived in their heads. But when they brought their pasts into the future, it kept them from seeing the present, in which America could actually be harmed, even go bankrupt. I think this dynamic applies to assumptions among the political class regarding unending American unity. Now, here's what she's saying. Just as we could take a financial beating and survive, that we could always be less than united, but remain overall united. In other words, at some point we would remember that we're all Americans, and that which divides us could never really divide the country. Just the way the country could take financial blows because it was so strong, its overall unity was so strong that it would survive. The unity would, that is. So let me pick up there again. I think this dynamic applies to assumptions among the political class regarding unending American unity. In the lives of every American now in politics in the country, has always managed to maneuver itself through rocky shoals, eased its way through changes, survived every challenge not only intact, but stronger. That has been the past, so they think it is the future. I think this keeps them from seeing clearly the chafing, antagonized, even fearful present. No nation's unity, cohesion, and feeling of being at peace with itself can be taken for granted, even ours. They have to be protected day by day, in part by what politicians say. They shouldn't be making it worse. They shouldn't be making divisions deeper. In just the past week, that means the president shouldn't be using a fateful and divisive word like impeachment to raise money and rouse his base. He shouldn't be at campaign rallies where he speaks only to the base. He should be speaking to the country. He shouldn't be out there dropping his G's, slouching around a podium, complaining about his ill treatment, describing his opponents with disdain. Just stop hating all the time. The House Minority Leader shouldn't be using the border crisis as a campaign prop, implying that Republicans would back Democratic proposals if only they were decent and kindly. It's not just about having a heart, it's about having a soul. And revealed this week, important government administrators like Lois Lerner shouldn't be able to operate an agency culture so sick with partisanship that she felt free to refer to Republicans using her government email account as crazies and bleep holes. All this reflects a political culture of brute and mindless disdain, the kind of culture that makes divisions worse. They do this because they do not understand that they have an actual responsibility to hold this thing, America, together every day. The more placid, more coherent nation they grew up in is in the past. Unity, cohesion, and respect are no longer things that can be lauded now and then in prepared remarks. They actually have to be practiced. What she's saying is liberal leaders are being irresponsible in the way they demonize the right. All right, I'm going to try to get this in before the break. Here is what I think she doesn't, this is what I think she leaves unsaid. What are people missing right now in the Gaza dispute? What are they missing? That Hamas does not recognize the Israeli state's right to exist. It sees the Zionist movement, that is, that Jews would have a country state in their homeland. They don't recognize that. They do not recognize the Jewish right to be there. We have the same thing going on in America right now. The left has tried so hard to marginalize the conservative belief system that they have succeeded in doing so in their own minds. Now, be very careful what I'm saying here. Liberalism no longer recognizes conservatism's right to exist. You will note I didn't say liberals and conservatives, because I don't want some liberal listening. Jerry Bader says we want to kill all of them. You notice I didn't say liberals and conservatives. Liberalism as a political ideology today is driven by marginalizing conservatism out of existence. It's why they are stifling people from speaking on college campuses. It's why people with a room temperature IQ like Judd Lounsbury listen to this show and try to take out of context anything he can possibly find. Because they do not recognize conservatism's right to exist. It is why newspapers, and we've been talking about this all year long, it's why newspapers no longer allow comments that question global warming. It's why you are vilified if you don't support legalized gay marriage. They believe the road to victory is to marginalize us out of existence. Again, not kill us, but marginalize us into silence. It's why, and she even points, she thinks the word impeachment is extreme. I don't. The act would be, but saying that there have been impeachable offenses is not extreme. But even she doesn't realize that she's a victim of this. So, yes, I agree with the friend that she would not name. I think there are going to have to be two Americas. There's going to have to be an irretrievable split. A friend and I have been talking about this all year long as well. And maybe her friend is right, that it won't be violent. It won't even be all that bad. But that the two sides have reached irreconcilable differences. It is the same thing as Palestine and Israel. You're never going to have peace if one side doesn't recognize the other side's right to exist. That's what you have in America right now. And as long as liberalism pushes that strategy, that conservatism doesn't have the right to exist, yeah, we are irretrievably split. It's 9:24.
Jerry on Twitter. Go to jerrybadershow.com.